Welcome back to the Great Thought Podcast, everybody. You're here with, I fugged up, Jamesy.
We all fugged up.
We all fugged up.
I fugged up, and you fugged up, and we all fugged up.
And that is kind of the summary of the book, The Last Dive by Bernie Chowdhury. So thanks for listening. We'll talk to you guys next week.
Hope you enjoyed.
No, it's been, Brando, it's been a wild month diving deeply into this book. This is like a real, like, full-time job.
Well, I don't know if I'd go that far. It doesn't pay a full-time job pay. I mean.
It doesn't have the wage, true, but the workload that we've been putting in. This is like the hardcore history of scuba podcasts.
I don't know. I think that's a little exaggerating, but yes, we have put in, and especially on your end, trying to sew together a recap that isn't too detailed and yet still has the good parts that the folks need to know or want to know. Hopefully, our listeners are out there reading the book on their own or listening to the book
on
their
own. And they are. We've gotten messages from people talking about that very thing. Like, hey, thanks for doing this. I picked up the book. I'm on the last chapter right now. You know, it's great. People revisiting the book, new people buying the book that never knew about the book. So it's been a fun couple of podcasts to get into, and it's been a fun exchange with our listeners via email and messenger and stuff like that.
Maybe Bernie will buy us a cup of coffee, or you know, throw us a quarter for our time.
Right. Thanks, Bernie. But Brando, you know, where we last left the people, you know, really, as far as the Rouses go, it's the end of the book. But it wasn't the end of the story of the Yoo-hoo. I mean, in reality,
right,
that was very early on. That was the very beginning. I mean, they had just started diving on this wreck.
Yeah, in an attempt to ascertain its exact identification, and had that small select group of divers that Chatterton selected. And of course, then this happened, but it didn't stop the group from continuing.
No, they kind of went on a maniacal rampage in many ways.
On a binge.
For another 6 years after this, of like ruining lives, ruining families, ruining marriages. Like, nothing is going to get in the way of us discovering what this wreck is, why it's here, who is on it. I mean, nothing is going to get in the way.
It is. That is a little maniacal. It's a little crazy. I mean, I do get the idea that you become single focused on a goal, and a lot of times it does destroy everything around you, as I've done myself. Fortunately, I caught myself. Hopefully, the Chatterton and Kohler team and the rest of the crew on board caught themselves before their entire life was in demise.
Well, they're both doing pretty good nowadays.
Yeah. So the story has a happy ending.
Yeah, it does. It does. Especially for old John Chatterton and Richie Kohler. We've gotten a ton of messages about the Shadow Divers, which was kind of the other book.
Right. It's not the sequel, per se, but it is the other book going into the pursuit of the identification of the Yoo-hoo with basically Chatterton and Kohler.
Right. So it's the story of the Yoo-hoo, more in line directly with their perspective.
And this one's written by Robert Curson, who Curson's a professional writer, lawyer, Harvard Law School graduate, wrote for the Chicago Sun-Times, etc. So anyway, that was a big-time book, too, when it came out.
I think even bigger time.
Probably.
Than The Last Dive, because it's equated with The Perfect Storm, which, you know, later became a George Clooney, Mark Wahlberg feature blockbuster film. You know, it's got a little bit more Hollywood, New York Times street cred.
Well, yeah, it was on the New York Times, peaking at number 2 on the bestseller list.
Yeah, right. It was a big deal. Whereas The Last Dive, the Yoo-hoo's in there, but in reality, it's what we've been talking about these last couple of weeks. It's a book about Chris and Chrissy Rouse.
Right.
It's a book about Bernie Chowdhury autobiography. It's a book about the history of scuba diving.
Yeah, the details of the very young days of technical diving and how we came about to do what we do now. And the marriage of wreck diving and cave diving and the quarrels within.
Right, and that's what I loved about The Last Dive. The way that Bernie blended those three stories. The look back at the early days, that fight between taking all this scuba gear and just taking it deeper and deeper and deeper and further and further and further and not really having the system in place like we have today.
Yeah, it was the development of the system where you do a lot of trial and error. I think the bad side of it was...
the error.
Well, because they all thought they had it down. You know, there's so many that grasp onto, I've got it now. And just like we were talking about last night, you never get it. You're continually moving forward. It's an evolution that never really stops. The road to perfection doesn't have a destination. It's just a road that you continually, hopefully, get better. Sometimes there's a step backwards.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Beautifully said. And by the way, we should give a little shout out, you know, to last night. We got to partake in the Ohio Council of Skin and Scuba Divers annual live event.
Do people use the term skin diving anymore? I mean, it was a big term in the 60s, 70s to denote. I mean, they kind of encompassed scuba diving and skin diving, but kind of separated into really what is snorkeling today.
Right, but you remember, you know, that council started back in 1959. So
I know.
I'm going to give them some street cred right there for sticking with
skin?
That old terminology. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's pretty that's pretty cool, man, you know.
There's a little
there's some OGs right there.
Of course there's OGs and not taking away from the OGs.
Pre-training agencies in a lot of respects.
Right. They actually set up their own rules and regulations to a certain degree to aid in scuba diving where the agencies weren't there. But, I mean, just the skin, it's a little pornographic maybe.
The hell kind of snorkel is that?
That's no snorkel. I'm just glad to see you. Yeah.
If you're interested, you can always go over to their YouTube page. That's where they live streamed this event. They tried to do it on Facebook, but there was an issue with the Facebook connection. So I don't think so. If anybody tried to watch it and it went out on them, it was aired officially over at their YouTube page, which you can look up the Ohio Council of Skin and Scuba Diving. The Ohio Council of Skin and Scuba Divers page, and there's a link there.
And did we mention that we did a discussion on panic based on our episode 314, Don't Panic. But yeah, I thought it was a really nice discussion.
Yeah, I think it was a real fun discussion about Don't Panic. And in many ways, it falls right in line with a lot of the stuff that we were looking at with this whole story of Chris and Chrissy Rouse, you know, because for two guys that were so well dived in the last number of years, a year before, a month before, a week before, no one would have said, who do you think on this group of divers down here at the quarry at Dutch Springs, where they were active divers, are going to be two divers that are going to panic, rocket to the surface and die. Nobody would have picked the Rouses.
Yeah.
Right. And we had the discussion of like nobody gets the question wrong on the quiz of should you panic on a dive and rocket to the surface? True or false? Right. Nobody gets that wrong. Yet, when things go wrong underwater, it's hard to avoid, you know. Once you've lost control of your breathing, the loss of the situation, and the panic sets in, boy, that's a hard one to beat.
Well, that's the definition of panic, is an uncontrollable loss of control of your own actions and thoughts. And it's usually caused by, as we learned about, I tried to speak about that, that panic triangle that the psychologists speak of. And even our friend Jennifer Hunt, who we're going to talk about later, who was mentioned in The Last Dive, she talks about the panic triangle. And what that is that you have to have three ingredients, each is a leg on that triangle, much like the old fire triangle. You remember oxygen, fuel, and a source of ignition, which is the heat. And now it's a tetrahedron, I think they call it, or something, because you've got to have a chemical reaction. Long story short is the triangle has three legs. And
welcome to the Great Polygon Podcast, everybody.
I don't know how I go off on these. Everything is related to everything else in my head. It's a giant net, you know, Indra's net, if you know what that is. Anyway, the idea is you have these three ingredients to get panic or to keep from getting panic. And if you
so I have
take
to have fire?
Them,
I have to have fire to have panic?
Exactly. You need fire, or oxygen, and heat source.
And whiskey.
And a whiskey. No, you've got to have the event or the stressor, what's going to trigger the panic. The readiness is so if you're missing the readiness, in other words, you're missing the skill set, or you're missing the proper equipment, you're not ready for that event or trigger, that can cause the panic. And then, of course, regulation, which is how you handle panic, your emotions, thoughts, how much of a cool cucumber you are, which, of course, everyone believes they're fucking Fonzie, and very few are. As a matter of fact, I think that is at the source of a lot of issues, is everybody thinks they're a little better at handling stress than they are, especially underwater.
You know, Mike Tyson said it the best.
Yeah,
everybody's got a plan until they get punched
in the face. And that is exactly that's the triangle right there. There's your stressor.
Right.
And then you don't realize how you handle it till it's actually on you. And you're not equipped with the skill set. So if you're not a good fighter, you know, you're not ready for Mike Tyson. You're going to panic in the round. And then he knows that. That's a brilliant analogy there, James, or a brilliant observation.
So, Brando, the trigger for Chris and Chrissy, I mean, you can look at this in a lot of ways, right? Because here we just said, like, here's two guys that are never going to panic. They know you can't ever panic. They help teach the scuba class. They help talk to the people about stop, breathe, think, and act. They know that when the situation gets bad, I just got to stop and breathe and think about being trapped under the shelving unit with the life raft exploded, pinned to the bottom. And then I can act and I'll get out of here just fine. Right? There's no reason to panic down here.
Yeah, I think they got that question right every time on the scuba test. And I think back then it was the stop, think, and react kind of thing. So they thought you just had to put a think in there and you were good to go. But the whole breathe insertion was an awesome little point to put in. But yeah, so you had your event, which, you know, there's a lot of things contributing to that event.
I mean, I would say that there were multiple triggers.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, the terribly run line...
Terribly run isn't the word. It wasn't run. I mean, and there's a lot of assumption going on there. So you're having a breakdown in protocol procedure, which goes through a breakdown of training. I mean, we keep going. You can keep going backwards. I think that's where we run into a problem with accident analysis is they go, well, if he would have just ran the line correctly,
you know. Yeah, it's easy to have the hindsight that we're doing right now, right? But there are some things that we know. I mean, a trigger is certainly getting pinned by a shelving unit that fell on top of you while you're 230 feet underwater.
Absolutely. That is a trigger. And,
that's
and you're by yourself.
Most anybody's going to shit their pants.
Yeah. And the shelving unit, we should remind folks, this was not an IKEA shelving unit. This was a shelving unit from a German submarine from World War II that probably weighed hundreds of pounds underwater, not hundreds of pounds on the surface, or more than hundreds of pounds on the surface. Anyway, long story short is that's enough, you know, the things that go through your mind. Somebody asked us last night, you know, what are some of our close call panic situations? Did we ever get close to panic? It was in the chat. We didn't really address it, but I've been to where And I know you have, where you can feel it knocking on the door, like, okay, keep cool, because nothing good happens when your brain starts firing in all directions. You have to stay focused.
It's really hard to stop that from continuing downhill.
And the only thing I think that kept me ever from panicking underwater is my training, and also with my military training. The idea that panic never helps, and rely on your training, and the knowledge that panic isn't going to help. You just fucking losing control is not going to get you out of here.
Well, sure, but when we look at, you know, the history of the Great Dive podcast and some of the stories that we've looked at, there's been plenty of people that tried to keep their cool in a cave. And, you know, prior to a lot of the navigational aids that are in caves nowadays, stayed cool, went swimming, but in the totally wrong direction. And then, I mean, it still could happen.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm not saying it's not there. All I'm saying is you're always trying to stave it off in those types of events where a trigger happens, where you're in a situation that you have to rely on your training. You have to rely on your equipment. And if you are subpar in your training and you have subpar equipment or improper equipment for the situation, your regulation, in other words, your ability, your emotions, your thoughts, your ability to handle that is going to break down. Once you realize it, that's the other side of it. If you're not smart enough to realize it, you might just get out of it because your stupidity got you out of it and you never panicked. You never knew what trouble you were in, which I've seen.
Man, I've been saying that for years, you know, not just in scuba, but in other stuff I've done in my life. Never underestimate the power of luck.
Yeah. Dumb luck. That's called dumb luck, because ignorance is bliss.
And because having the right training is one thing, but, you know, what chapter of the book is getting out of a situation where you're pinned under a shelving unit inside of a shipwreck in 230 feet of water looking for the captain's logbook?
Yeah.
Can I look in the index to go right to that section?
No, I get you, James. And of course, we're doing a little analysis, hindsight, and looking at all this. So it's easy to sit back here and go, oh, well, here's where the cause was, and here's what happened. But in the middle of it, it's like anything else. You have to have a global view. That's what I think training helps, right? It gives you a global view.
Right. And what about the trigger for Chris Sr.?
Yeah.
Of seeing the line go limp.
Right.
Not getting any feedback.
I think there were minor triggers.
Hearing the screams of his kid. Boom, there's a big trigger for him.
That's a huge trigger. It was a bunch of minor triggers until, you know, I think they all added up. You're not getting anything on the line. You're hearing the screams. You get in there and your kid is pinned. That, okay, so those just each added up. Then you get them out and you get a little bit of relief. But we haven't got our fucking deco gas.
Oh, son of a bitch.
Now we're fucked.
So is that a breakdown on that triangle of the readiness? Because I've lost equipment that I should have that I need.
Yeah, you're ill-equipped
to handle.
But in a way,
it's also a whole nother trigger. It spirals a whole nother triangle.
It's a stressor.
A tetrahedron. A tetrahedron, if you will.
You're exactly right. That realization that you're ill-equipped to handle this now. You don't have the right equipment. You're going to have to make a decision. And this decision is not going to be a good decision. In the sense of there are very few ways in this scenario that everything works out okay. And you know it. You know it in your head because you're well-trained in the education department, right? You understand the necessity of decompression. And your buddy Bernie kind of had a similar incident on a wreck not as deep and blew off decompression. This one is deeper. And they know they're going to have to blow off decompression. That's called explosive decompression.
230 feet of water.
At least you had 4.5 martinis to kind of
make the decision a little bit easier.
Yeah. Maybe you had a Dean Martin singing in the background. Everybody loves somebody. That's pretty bad. For all our Dean Martin fans out there, fellow Dinos.
That other side of the triangle, regulation.
That's the ability to deal with it.
Right, but I'm sitting here thinking about this, you know, after the fact, of course. In a way, it's also the inability not to deal with it. Or, you know, it's like having the right thoughts to process what's going on. But it's also, right, we got to remember that 4.5 martinis, like the inability to process thoughts.
Well, logical thought isn't there, but it's a double-edged sword, because the good side of that sword is you're numb to the actual realization. That realization of I'm fucked. Although the 4.5 martinis can work both ways, right? To the hyper paranoia and the overly easily agitated sense.
Well, yeah, and in many ways, this becomes that narcosis becomes a whole nother trigger in and of itself, right? It's like the nonagon of.
We're really getting up there, aren't we? This is
these polygon circles.
It's going to eventually just become a giant sphere where it's all just interrelated. Everything touches everything else, and if you just, you know, take out one part, you're going to collapse.
But we talked about this last night in the show with the Ohio boys
and girls.
The snowball effect of trigger upon trigger upon trigger upon trigger upon trigger, you know, really, you know, just explodes an exponential realm of possibilities. And I mean, even some of the questions that were coming in last night is, well, what do you do to prevent panic? It's really simple. Don't panic. It's on the quiz.
Right. Well, I think the answer to that question, it's not so much a prevention of panic as is a preparation for the events leading to the panic and the constant vigilance in trying to avoid one of these legs, one of these fucking triangle legs, so being kicked out from under you. That's how you avoid panic. You train. You get good training. You dive the proper equipment. You gain experience. All of that helps in that regulation. The more experience you have, the easier it is to handle. Like, oh, I've been here before. I've been where my mask is kicked off, and I've been to where it's silted out inside of a cave. But when I hit these stressors, I can go, okay, my experience is kicking in, and I don't lose my regulation of it. In other words, I don't lose my emotional ability or thought to handle the scene or situation.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's the only way you really can approach panic or the idea of panicking underwater is you have to prepare for it. You have to prepare for the likelihood, the very highly likely event that is going to trigger panic. If you dive long enough, you're going to run into it. And even if you don't, you could do it on your first dive. And that's where we see it a lot, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. I would say that the minute you think you've trained enough, right, that's the fool right there, right? Like that whole notion that we've had the discussion before of, you know, that difference between trying to build mastery and what the fool is. And the, you know, the master is the person who knows that they've never trained enough. The fool is the one who thinks they got it down pat. And the moment you think that you've done enough training is the moment where you're setting yourself up. It's about to happen.
Yeah, and I bring this up all the time. It can't happen to me. That won't happen to me. I'm too cool. I'm too cool of a cucumber. I've got too good a training. I'm too skilled. I'm overly skilled. I mean, we know people like this.
It says dive master right here. Right. Yeah. On my chevron.
I think the worst thing you can think going into the water is it won't happen to me. That can't happen to me.
And I agree. Yeah, I mean that's what happens, you know, when you hit these training plateaus, it's really easy to think that
you're there.
Everything's settled down. Yeah. Oh, this is it. I got it now, man. Nothing new's happening. It's the same old thing. Or even the opposite of that. You know, you're just a pretty good student, you're a pretty good diver. It kind of falls naturally to you. So everything, every class you take, you get a handshake. Every class you take, you get a patch. Every class you take, you get an award, right? So everything's always good. It's really easy to fall into that fool's path that nothing bad's going to happen.
You've never had the stressor, especially with a lot of those classes. The stressor's been removed because the stressor is scary, you know? But
the stressor takes away from you buying the next class.
Thank you. I mean, those are the things we're talking about. But you need that stressor in order to have experience, which contributes to the regulation. In other words, if you're familiar with the stressor, you've been exposed to it in a real life or as close to real life scenario as you can get in a control. It's controlled, but it's more realistic. So now when it happens for real, you fall back on, oh yeah, my instructor tore my mask off, or, you know, grabbed my mask. Well, that's how it happens in real life. Not that someone grabs your mask. Of course, they do sometimes in a panic situation. You see them do that, but it gets kicked off. It gets bumped off. Somehow the mask is knocked off your head. Nobody ever swam up to me and said, hey, can I have your mask? Ever.
No, but we have spent an hour on the surface talking to, you know, divers that are training with us about positioning in the water and why you don't turn one way, you turn another way so that you don't kick somebody in the face, and everybody agrees, and then you go underwater, and what's the first thing that they do?
They kick
them
in the face.
They turn and they kick somebody in the face, and so, I mean, it's... Again, this is where I go to. It's not the question on the test.
Right.
It's not talking about it. It's not
doing
being able to know it on land. Mm-hmm. Because on land ain't shit when you get underwater.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, even the out of gas scenarios. Nobody ever says, hey, on this dive, we're gonna run out of gas about 10 minutes into the dive. Okay, we're going to have a catastrophic failure, whatever. I'm going to come up to you, and I'm gonna give you the slash across my throat sign. That never happens. And I know this from teaching classes. I mean, I always think back on a rescue class I was teaching, and the student had he had an Air McDoodle, okay? And he had a snorkel, too, because, of course, snorkels are mandatory.
Mandatory, yeah.
And one of the first things I do is, let's go for a little dive. I'm going to evaluate where you're at and see how you do an air share, how you clear your mask and stuff like that. So we get down there. I don't do, like, a fake, like, little hand across my throat to evaluate students. I get down there. You okay? Okay. I go in full Oscar nomination mode, and I spit my rag out. Rah, I'm out of gas, you know? And, of course, he gives me the one out of his mouth. Good job. And then he goes to his snorkel underwater because it's hanging right next to his Air McDoodle. I'm watching, and...
Did you tell him beforehand his snorkel doesn't work well in 40 feet of water?
No, half of me wanted him to get that law of impact. That would be very bad. So I grabbed his hand, took it off the snorkel, and put it on his Air McDoodle so he could use it. And then are you okay? Oh, I'm okay. Let's ascend. And he saw the difficulty in the ascent while using the Air McDoodle. And I mean, you just see the problems with that piece of equipment. But what I'm getting at is that obviously wasn't practiced enough. So the trigger was there for the panic. He reached for the wrong thing. If I wasn't there paying attention, I was a real out of gas diver, I would have just taken the gas, and I'm in my own world, and he would have went on a snorkel. Now we got two divers being stupid underwater, and probably two possibly injured or dead divers from embolism.
Yeah, I mean that story is not uncommon. I mean, you go back and look at accident reports of the recreational scuba diving history, and you'll see that almost word for word multiple times of that leads to, you know, that accident leads to two fatalities or two embolisms or one fatality and one embolism.
Yeah, so it's just things like that.
So you know what we need is we need to have a question on the exam that says, should you accidentally put your snorkel in your mouth at depth instead of your Air McDoodle? Would that take care of it? What if we had an acronym that said, don't put snorkel in?
You must be on the board of one of these educational committees that design our education system, because I think that's their approach, is they look at an accident. Oh, this happened due to this. You know, this happened due to him reaching for his snorkel. So let's make a question on the test that says something to the effect of, should I or should I not reach for my snorkel in an out-of-gas emergency? emergency at depth. And there, we covered it. And the lawyers go, check, because, hey, he said he knew not to reach for his snorkel in the trial. Look, it's on the test. He got it right. I'm hoping you're seeing where I'm going with this, because...
Oh, yeah, I see it clear as day.
A question on the test doesn't equal real world practice. And the idea, like, you can just ask questions of what not to do or what to do, and boom, you've covered the bases. You have to be stressed, and you have to learn how to handle that stressor properly. And the more experience you get doing that, the more prepared you are for the emergency, for the trigger, and then you're ready with that triangle. You got the stressor, you knew how to react, you have the proper equipment and training. So that's how you handle panic. I mean, that's the only way to approach it, is try, and it's constant in the trying to address scenarios with vigilant training, good equipment, proper equipment, and learning how to use that equipment, and keeping your mind strong.
Yeah, I mean, I think people need to think back, you know, a time in their life when they got the living shit scared out of them. Like, I mean, have you ever had an experience in your life where you were like
a positive, like, pregnancy test,
and you turned well, there you go. You know, what if somebody would have said, you know, told you right then, how do you open up a condom package? You'd have been there like, you wouldn't have been able to respond. Like, if you've had a moment like that where you turn white as a ghost, like literally, like you're looking at the Grim Reaper going, hey, how you doing, buddy? Like, whether it's, you know, driving a car, you know, look at people today, like, you know, drifting across the median into head on traffic. You know, holy shit.
Yeah.
You know, like when something like that happens and you're faced with death, for someone to go, okay, now answer this quiz question right now.
Well, on the test, it said, do I avoid the car coming at me across the median, or do I crash into it? I answered avoid, so I'm gonna go to that. I'm going to fall back on that test question.
Right, yeah. It's so people are looking for that quick, easy answer, and I think this is the problem with scuba education these last couple decades, is they've tried to make it sound that simple, that's all it is. Is just get the right answer right, and you'll be fine. Well,
yeah, James, they've addressed it, man. According to the legal department, they've addressed it. Base covered, game over. Shut the door. Next.
Well, now if we let's tear this off on a decagon of possibilities, Brandon.
We went nonagon. We're in the decagon. We're going to have to go to what is the 11 and 12 and 13? I can't remember off the top of my head.
But there's a lot of the diving community, a lot of the well-established, you know, old regime of diving community that would say, you know, if we go back to Chris and Chrissy Rouse, well, that's why we shouldn't be diving to 230 feet. That's why the limit is set at 130 feet. That's why you use an aluminum 80.
Yeah.
You use a single tank, and you go down, you do your dive, you have your fun, you get up and you tip your dive boat, you don't go beyond NDLs, and this is a, you know, this is stuff that's, you know, should be shoved into the closet, and we don't talk about this stuff at all.
Yeah, I think that's that is part of it, the mentality that kind of great. It's like fingernails on a chalkboard for me. That mentality, it just gets me cringy.
Because you know the people are good. I mean, if we look at the history, they're going to do it anyways. I mean, the people that set these rules up were doing it until they got scared shitless. That's why 90% of the old guard, they don't even dive anymore. They're just in it for the business.
Yeah, and they were doing the 200-foot dives on a single,
and they all probably
72 of air.
And they probably got scared shitless, which
they
is,
did.
Right. I know they did. I'm not going to say they probably. I know they did.
Yes, we talked to them. We know them.
Yeah. But, so when you look at the situation with Chris, of he luckily made it back to his bottle. Chrissy, they never got to their bottles. So is that a that's certainly a whole nother trigger of realizing, holy shit, like I don't have a way back to all the gas that I need to get up. What's better, drowning here or explosive decompression?
Right. You had to make a decision. Yeah.
That's on the advanced test.
Exactly. What's better? Neither. And that's, again, where it's easy to look at hindsight. But just speaking on that incident right there, or that circumstance, people never looked at it as, I'm never going to come out of the wreck in a different spot I went in. That's never going to happen. So, yeah, I'm just going to leave these bottles right here.
Yeah. Nobody expects that they're going to come out of a shipwreck and have no clue where the upline is.
Yeah, I don't know why. That was more of back then. I think we approach it a little differently now.
We do, yeah.
Because of incidents like this, right?
Yeah, we've learned to be able to carry and be able to deploy a marker bag in an event like this.
So, what does that tell you as far as the approach to diving in unknown territory and understand that you're going to come into circumstances that you haven't dealt with before? So how do you approach that kind of dive with unknowns and being somewhat prepared for those unknowns? Because you can't possibly, and we say this to students all the time, like, I can't teach you how to handle every single situation you're going to come across in your diving career, especially not knowing where you're going to go with your diving career. But I can give you a philosophy that has worked for me and others. So,
oh, yeah, but pick your sport.
Right, yeah.
It's
not unique to scuba.
The Red Wings, won their first Stanley Cup in, 1930s, 1940. Do they need to practice anymore? The game's always evolving, and what you think you know today, everybody's trying and working to improve the game, improving techniques, and the techniques are changing. You think diving's that different? Diving's not even 100 years old. And look at some of these games that have been played since the 1800s. And they still up and show up at practice. They don't go, well, back at the World Cup, in 1869, this is how they did it. Let's just stick to that.
No, I think they realized, and as should we, that constant practice is needed and constant reevaluation of procedures and protocol and equipment. So you never really have it down. You can do your best as far as constantly practice, but you never have that perfection. And once you believe you do, I think you've opened the door to problems.
I think that is... I think that's it in a nutshell right there, is the fool is the one who thinks he's got it mastered. And the only way to really master it and really to know that you're never going to panic and have a situation is to never accept that you've got it down pat and you don't need to practice anymore.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that was...
And even then, we're playing the devil's game in many ways. There's no guarantees. When you go underwater as a human being, there's no 100% guarantee that you're coming home.
No. And you got to realize that. And that's what I think we're kind of addressing here, is that overconfidence, that idea like, okay, I know this, I've got it. And it goes to, I think it was Socrates who said, the only thing I really know, the only thing I've ever really learned is that I don't know anything.
I think that was Cliff on Cheers when he was
old Cliffy.
The only thing that I know for sure is that I don't know shit.
That was a great show. Now that was a great show. Hey, Norm, what's going down? My butt on this bar stool. Anyway, no, I think that when you realize, I'm never going to get there, I'm never going to get to a point where I'm there, right?
And at the same time, I'm never going to stop trying.
Right, right, exactly.
That's your most likely path to long-term success.
That's a good one, Jamesy.
Brando, it's springtime. Birds are chirping.
Love is in the air.
It's spring break time for the kids.
Yeah. And booze. So love and booze are in the air.
You're going to go down, hang out at the beach with the boys, have a couple of, double beer bongs. Try to, get some of that liquid courage so you get up that ability to flirt with the ladies down there on the beach. You better upgrade your below the belt game, everybody. You know what I'm talking about. Don't just go flexing your muscles at those girls out on, playing beach volleyball. The real flex this year is keeping your boys downstairs fresh and clean. Nobody wants to be the guy with a pube fiesta. That's why our good old buddies at Manscaped created the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra. You know it. It's the ultimate weapon to tame those unruly bushes. Guys and ladies, I see you with those little bikini bottoms. Before you hit that pool party, make sure your boys are groomed to perfection. Join the Manscaped Revolution by going to manscaped.com for 20% off and free shipping with the code TGDP. And Brando, we should tell the people, we got a message that our code has been leaked.
Our code has been leaked. We're a podcast. We're not a fucking CIA. We're not a top secret organization. Our code has been leaked. We got to find the source.
Either that or they're like, man, there's no way this silly little scuba podcast could be buying this many products from us. They've given us a new code. It's The Great Dive. All one word, The Great Dive.
What about the guys at The Great Dive? They're going to be pissed off.
Hey, what can you say? You want to get 20% off and free shipping on your Performance Package 5.0 Ultra? You got to use now The Great Dive code instead of TGDP. I don't know if TGDP still works, but if it doesn't work, try The Great Dive. That's all I know.
Could they have changed it to TGD?
TGDP2?
Yeah, TGDP. I don't know. Anyway.
Anyways, everybody, if you want to get 20% off free shipping, use the code TheGreatDive at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code TheGreatDive at manscaped.com. You know it, Manscaped, for when you want to be caught with your pants around your ankles. Brando, what a run of the last dive.
Yeah, well, it's been on the hit list since almost day one of the Great Dive podcast inception. And then, we finally got around to it.
Everybody that's been listening, everybody that's been messaging, everybody that's been, telling us how much they absolutely love this book. Thank you for everything. Again, huge shout out to all of our listeners worldwide, all of our donators on Patreon and people who send in PayPal donations. The flood of people recently asking for more Don't Touch stickers. It's been great. It means so much to Brando and I. And those of you who've sent messages knowing how much work we've put into doing this book, and we hope you've enjoyed it, and we hope you enjoy what's coming up later on this year as well.
So if you're into diving, if you're into learning about the history of how we have come to do what we do, stick with us. There's more to come. On that note,
Brando,
yeah.
After this, should we sign some logbooks?
Well, this is a good dive, I guess. How I entered 2024 saying, fuck these logbooks. You know how I am with logbooks. I prefer film, video. I prefer yapping about the dive. But, yeah, let's sign logbooks.
You can say it. You fucked up about signing logbooks.
I fucked up. I'm going to say it. I fucked up about signing logbooks.
Yeah. And I kind of agreed with you, but nah, I was only kidding. like old Chris would say, I was just kidding. We don't have to sign these logbooks.
Dear Jamesy, I'm a loser for not signing the logbook.
Oh, you're not going to sign your logbook? What are you, a pussy?
Okay. Okay, I'll sign the logbook.
Nah, I was just kidding. We don't have to sign. No, we're not signing logbooks. We're not signing logbooks. All right, everybody. Big shout out to Bernie Chowdhury and posthumous hey to Chris and Chrissy Rouse.
Yes.
Rest in peace, boys.
And I know that a whole lot of people learned your sacrifice. So,
all right, everybody. We will talk to you next week.
Until then, don't you go changing.
The Great Dive Podcast is hosted by your buddies, James and Brando. Run, 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 run.